It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, it's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 79% always.
Steven Brown.
It changes week to week.
Yeah.
You've also been very busy, so.
I have, unfortunately. Speaking of busy, I won't even be here for this full episode.
Oh, yeah, I think you're going to get up and run.
You got me for about
I really hope it's like
minutes.
An old radio show where you just hear footsteps and a door close.
I'll try to make as much noise as possible.
I was like, when I was a kid growing up, they had all these Sesame Street records because there were no VHS yet.
Oh, yeah.
So they would just do radio sketches, and Ernie and Bert would like, they would just be in a studio talking to each other. And then every now and then they would do like the door closing. They're like, here's Grover. And you hear like, pop, 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 pop. And on the show, you don't hear any feet because it's a guy's arm.
Yeah, because they're puppets.
Yeah, that was great. I always wondered when they did that. Do they bring the puppets in the recording studio?
I think they probably did because they helps them get into character, doesn't it?
Yeah. I always think of that in the Muppet movie when Miss Piggy sings Never Before, Never Again. And she hits that really high note at the end of that song.
Yeah.
I always picture Frank Oz with headphones on. Bald guy with a mustache and glasses. That is not our topic at all.
No, we have Paul Booth here.
Dr. Paul Booth is back.
Hi. Oh, Dr. Paul Booth. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, it's been a while.
About a year, I think, since the last time.
I think so. In fact, we were going to promote last year's event at DePaul. We didn't do it.
So did we forget to do that?
We did forget to do it. It's even longer.
Well, you know what? It feels like it was only yesterday that we last hung out.
Right, but longtime listeners will remember Dr. Paul Booth is the professor of media studies at DePaul University, and once a year he holds a celebration. So you've done Joss Whedon, you've done Supernatural, this year's Star Trek, you've done Doctor Who?
I have done Doctor Who as well, so okay. this is the fourth
so this
one.
This is your fourth, yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Next year's the fifth anniversary. I'm taking suggestions for what I should do. So.
Oh.
X-Files.
You are the second person in 2 days to say X-Files, and I'm really seriously considering it.
Well, the fact that it came back and it was a hit,
yeah.
I think.
But it has to be something you know about, right? You couldn't just talk. It's supposed to be like geek culture.
Geek culture.
Yeah.
I like to theme it around anniversaries, because it's Star Trek's 50th this
year.
Yeah.
Is there any big anniversaries next year?
Well, the big one is Star Wars' 40th.
Oh. Are you not a Star Wars guy?
I am a Star Wars guy. The trouble is it's, A, very difficult to get kind of guest speakers from Star Wars, because there's only, like, you could do the Clone Wars, I guess, but then there's the movies.
Yeah, maybe, you could find somebody from the animated series.
Yeah,
from
maybe.
Rebels
but, I mean, people know the movies best of all, and it's really hard to get Hollywood people to come out.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll have to. I'll take suggestions. Yeah. But yeah. I love the idea of X-Files.
And I would imagine because the first season was such a hit, I would imagine season two of the reboot will have happened.
Yeah.
By next year.
I think
so.
You're
I think
right.
It'll still be around and viable.
Well, and Gillian Anderson is a graduate of DePaul University.
Oh my gosh, you would totally do it.
So
there you go.
I'm thinking about putting feelers
she
out.
She seems impulsive enough to just be like, yeah.
I know, right?
And just show up.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I know, that would be so cool.
So why did it take you so long to do Star Trek? It's such a big dog in the room.
I waited till the 50th. Oh. It was actually always my plan to do Star Trek in 2016.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? If you started the program, 3 years ago? So you kind of knew it was coming.
Yeah, because the first one was Doctor Who, which was for Doctor Who's 50th.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was a big year overall.
Yeah,
that was the year that David Tennant and Matt Smith did the anniversary special.
That's when they had the three doctors?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, including one that they made up for the special.
Because that one asshole wouldn't play ball.
Because Christopher Eccleston instead wanted to play an elf in makeup and speak in tongues in Thor 2.
Right.
Rather than play the character he was known for in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Even at that point I said, all right, I don't know what I'm going to do in 2014. I don't know what I'm going to do in 2015, but 2016 is Star Trek.
Yeah.
Cause
I gotta have a plan.
Yeah. I've been a Trekker since I was a kid. So
where does Star Trek start for you? Because you're not old enough to have watched the original 60s series when it originally aired.
Star Trek, starts in two places for me. The first, I watched the old series with my dad, when I was really young. Like, it was repeated all the time. I grew up in the Chicago area, so it was repeated all the time, and we used to watch that. But I remember when Next Gen came out, And we would watch that together as well. And I watched all of Next Gen. That was like, I was, I think 6 through 14 would be the years, 6 through 13 maybe. So that's like the formative years for your kind of fermenting your geekhood.
Whatever you're going to be into.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little bit older. For me, it was, I would watch reruns with my dad after I'd seen Star Wars, and I was just dying for more sci-fi because it was only the one movie at the time. There was nothing else after you had gone to a theater and seen Star Wars and waited the 5 years for television to show it. And then we went to Star Trek The Motion Picture, which I fell asleep during.
Like a lot of people.
Yeah, I was 8, but it was Star Trek The Motion Picture. So I'm really not taking any of that blame. And then I remember when Wrath of Khan came out, it was when the local movie theater in my town split into two, and they had bought another storefront and added a smaller screen. And my whole family went, and my mother and my sister went to see Annie, and we went to see Wrath of Khan, because they had both opened at the same time, and I was not prepared for Spock dying. Spoiler alert for a movie that's 35 years old.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, sorry. He comes back, spoiler alert for that, too.
The other spoiler alert. Next movie, The Search for Spock.
Yeah, literally the next movie is called The Search for Spock, so you know he's coming back. Yeah.
Which I remember they were announcing. I'm like, that's an odd title. We know where he is. He's in that coffin.
Right. How hard could he be to find? Yeah. Wait, didn't they jettison his body out into space?
They did.
See, there you go. Space, a big place.
Well, we watched that. I showed you Wrath of Khan for the first time, because after we saw Star Trek Into Darkness...
So
you watched the better one.
Yeah, we covered Star Trek Into Darkness for the podcast. And
which we loved at the time.
Yeah, and then we watched it again, and it was like, I did the same thing with Die Another Day.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm so happy to see a James Bond movie that I didn't realize it was a bad one.
I think Spectre, we waited, so we got, you know,
at
least the 12 hours.
I just bought Spectre.
Oh, because doesn't it fit in your little box?
No, it doesn't fit in my little box, but I have the complete Bond box set, which is now incomplete. And also, if I spent $40 on Amazon, I could have gotten Force Awakens on the same day delivery for free.
No.
So I was like, what else can I add to this to make it $40? Spectre. I watched it a second time. It didn't help it.
Yeah.
I liked Spectre. I did. Sorry.
There are things in it I like.
There's things in it. Yeah, there's definitely things in it.
That opening shot is unbelievable.
The opening shot is really cool. Yeah. Like, I watched that. But it does what a lot of Bond movies does. It front loads itself, and then about an hour in, you're just like, what are we doing? Yeah. But Star Trek. Yeah, but Star Trek Wrath of Khan blew my whole world up. And then I became a devotee to the classic series, and I was there for 3 and for 4, and then... I kind of had a chip on my shoulder about Next Gen, because that first season wasn't great, and I was very loyal to Kirk and Spock, and I was one of those fans who were like, who are you to come in and say you're Star Trek? You know? And I didn't come back until Spock appeared.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and when Spock appeared, I was like, wait, this show is great now. And then, again, there was no DVD, there was no streaming. There were random VHS, but I just watched reruns, and then... From then, I never left.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, people argue about which is the better series and which kind of fits better into the canon and everything. And to me, I like looking at it as a whole, as like you are entering a universe and you're getting all of these different snapshots of it. And that's what I think is really so cool about Star Trek.
Yeah, and it's so vast.
Yeah, there's nothing else really kind of like it that I can think of.
Nothing else on television. I mean,
and it's one of those shows, you know, we talked before we were recording, is how many times I've tried to get into it. And I think it's because it's so big. There's so much stuff to get into that it's, well, the movies are easy to watch. Wrath of Khan's a classic. Like, I can do that, but it's like to watch the whole show, you know.
Yeah, and it doesn't have that jump on point that even Doctor Who has, where you could start Doctor Who with Christopher Eccleston, you could start Doctor Who with Matt Smith.
Yeah, with honestly, any of the regions.
And get it all and then go back. With Star Trek, even though they're different shows, that there's such a connective tissue that it's hard to just say, oh, I'm only going to watch Voyager.
Yeah. Well, then there's, because they have these every so often, these episodes, maybe like one a season, where they bring on a person from another series, or they like flash back to something that was happening in the past. I remember Voyager had this awesome episode where like Tuvok flashed back to the time he was on the Excelsior with Sulu.
Yeah, and George Takei
was in it, and it was referencing Star Trek VI, which was and probably still is my favorite Star Trek movie. Sorry, I love Wrath of Khan.
Star Trek
VI. Love Wrath of Khan, but VI has a special place in my heart. But and so you're like, oh, and that's bringing in the movies. It's bringing in the classic series. They flash back to the next gen time. So it's this whole world. It's this whole universe.
There's that beautiful episode of Deep Space Nine where they go back to an original episode and they rebuild the sets and the costumes, but then they do Forrest Gump. Cutting.
Oh, that's cool.
So they're actually talking to like young William Shatner and young Leonard Nimoy, and they redo an episode. So you see the original episode. And in fact, on both the classic Star Trek Blu-rays and the Deep Space Nine DVDs, they include the episode from the other season and
really
the bonus
cool.
features. Mm-hmm. So you could watch the original episode and then watch how they layered their characters in. Yet there is a very strong sense of continuity.
Yeah.
And as you know, continuity cuts both ways. That's a lot of the problem with comics is once stories become about other stories that have already happened, the core fans get very, very excited and casual fans
get lost.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there's a way to do it both in comics and film that I think doesn't get people lost, and the people who really want to know what that other story was can go back and find it, especially now. But it does seem to be this kind of like tightrope you have to walk of, all right, this show has to be about this one thing, but there's all this history that half the people who are reading this one thing have watched or read, and then there's all this history that half the people who are watching haven't watched or read. And
right.
It's like, it is a tightrope walk, I think.
And comics do that all the time. I was just rereading Final Crisis, and Grant Morrison loves to find characters we don't know existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you just created this weird character. He's like, no, actually, it's from a 1962 Japanese version of Batman.
And it's like, how are we supposed to know
yeah,
this?
And he comes in like fully formed with a continuity and you know, even the most hardcore of hardcore fans can get lost in it. I feel like Star Trek is, would you say Star Trek is like this cliff face that you feel like you have to scale to get there?
Star Trek seems like the movies seem very accessible. It's 2.5 hours or whatever, or like the new films.
How many of the movies have you seen?
I saw Wrath of Khan, the one where they rescue the whales.
That's four.
It's four. Four. The Voyage Home.
And then the two new ones they did.
The J.J. Abrams.
Oh, that's you got to watch six.
Yeah, six
is
great.
You got to watch
six.
The Undiscovered Country, man. It's the start of the Klingon.
It's a Klingon story.
Because it's every
also
other
the,
Star Trek movie is supposed to be good.
Yes. It's also the Star Trek 6 is also the very last film with the original cast, because Star Trek 7 is the first one with the next generation cast.
Okay. Yeah. I felt like my sister was into Star Trek when we were kids, not Lisa, Gina. And so I watched a couple episodes with her. I had some of the figures. So I'm very familiar with the aesthetics and what it looks like and how the episodes work. But it's something where, like, the show specifically, like, all my buddies are really into Next Generation. They're like, that's the best. All the political stuff's really good. Really smart. Picard's great. That's the stuff that if I'm going to get in a show, it'll probably be that one. But it's like...
And you don't have... That's probably the one that's the least connected to what came before.
Right.
Which is why I had the chip on my shoulder about it was, you know...
It's so different.
I was so different. I was excited there was a new Star Trek show. And then I saw Counter Farpoint, and I'm like, what is this?
Nothing
looks the same. They're not even holding communicators anymore. They're all in tights. And I gave it probably like 8 or 10 episodes, and when you go back and see that first season, those are not the good ones.
They struggled a bit in the first couple seasons for Next Gen. The one I'd recommend if you're into, and I know we were talking about House of Cards a little bit earlier, Deep Space Nine has got, like, especially seasons, I think 4 through 6, maybe even 3 through 6.
Yeah.
It's like this whole war that happens, and you kind of get this fantastic political intrigue and massive battles and huge players in the galactic stage. It's fantastic.
That's the first Star Trek series to ever do season arcs.
Yeah.
Next Generation, there's a continuity, but it's only the continuity of when aliens appear, they mention...
this time.
Yeah, it's like the television equivalent of the asterisk in the panel. Like, issue 276 was like, the last time we fought the Borg, these terrible things happen. But they don't have an overall continuity. With Deep Space Nine, it's the Federation goes to war against these aliens on the other side of the galaxy, and they're at war till the final episode.
I mean, that's a lot. Like, I watched Battlestar Galactica, and...
Same guy.
Same writer, right? Yeah. And that was a show, I loved it, I got super into it. And then at some point, I lost track of my life, and I stopped watching it, and I never finished it.
Now it's on Netflix.
Oh, I know. But now it's, I'd have to go back and start over because I have a horrific memory. So it's like a lot of the plot points, I'll be like, wait, who is this guy? Why is this guy doing that? Is this guy, I'd be completely lost.
Yeah.
So Battlestar Galactica, that's the trick too, is if I get into it, I got to stay to the end or else I'll lose it.
Battlestar Galactica at least isn't that long.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I think that's why I watched that over Voyager or Next Generation, because it was, what, 2-3 seasons maybe?
I mean, there's what, 761 episodes of Star Trek?
Something like that. Yeah. We did a back of the napkin calculation before the podcast started, something like 12,000 hours of Trek,
which is over a year and a half.
Well, they said at one point they said Paramount was considering a Star Trek channel because they knew they had the programming to fill,
and they, you know what, they could probably do it.
I went back, I have seen every episode of Star Trek, but it took me forever. I mean, I had, by the time Next Generation started, I'd seen all the classic series. I saw every movie when they came out. Mm-hmm. And I stuck with Next Gen and Deep Space Nine. But Voyager I dropped off, and Enterprise I dropped off. But then when I had time, I went back and did those. And it's a lot. And as we said, a lot of them aren't that great. We're in this golden age of television where people do 10 and make sure all of them are great before they do them. They're going back to the days of network television, even though several of those shows weren't on network.
Right.
But it was, we got to fill a week.
And you know what? That's a big part of, I think, how old are you, Paul?
I am 35.
35. I'm 30. So I think, I don't know how much of a difference there is between you and me, but I find it very difficult now. If a season has like 24 episodes or 25 episodes, I'm just like, ugh. I need like 10. 12. Get it over, get it done. If it has more than 15 episodes, it's like I'm less likely to get invested.
Well, this
in
is
it.
The whole binging thing, right? Like when you're marathoning an episode on Netflix, 15 episodes is like, that's like a week of my life.
Yeah.
But if you're spacing them out one a week, the difference between, you know, like an extra hour over 4 extra weeks or 5 extra weeks isn't that significant.
Yeah.
So that, to me, that's the big, like, I wouldn't binge watch Next Gen. I certainly wouldn't binge watch Voyager. But I'd space it out.
Yeah.
So I watch a couple, like maybe a disc every couple days.
I had that with X-Files, because when the new series came out, my wife gave me the complete series on Blu-ray for Christmas, and which actually looks much better than the Netflix version. So I was glad to have the discs.
Yeah.
As conflicted as I'm getting between owning discs and just letting things stream, because I know discs are dying.
Man, hold on to your discs. I think so. I mean, look at what happened with Doctor Who, not to change subjects.
Right.
Doctor Who leaves Netflix, leaves Hulu.
Goes to Amazon Prime.
And that's what you said before, too, John, is it's like, if you want to watch it, and Netflix pulls it, that it's gone.
Right.
You know, you can't watch it.
And that's where we were.
Won't always have everything.
I mean, there was a time a couple of years ago where Netflix was establishing itself to be this internet home of all things television and movies. And, you know, we'll just take subscriptions. We'll be YouTube with subscriptions.
Yeah.
And what they didn't foresee, and what I didn't even foresee as a fan, was that they would have competition.
Yeah.
And Amazon Prime and Hulu. We were talking a couple weeks ago with Elliot Serrano on the show about this, is that Netflix is also no longer invested in other people's programs. So they're letting things drop, because we were talking before we started about House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and Kimmy Schmidt. They want to be a network. They want to be HBO. When you watch HBO, you do not subscribe to HBO because they're going to rerun Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Right.
Like, there's,
you
want to
watch Game of Thrones.
Right. There's plenty of movies on HBO. Nobody cares about them.
Yeah.
You're there to watch Girls, to watch Game of Thrones. Hopefully Curb Your Enthusiasm if it ever comes back. You're there for John Oliver. You're there for their original programming, and the movies are a bonus. That's where Netflix is going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you see that when it's like their hottest shows are Daredevil, Orange is the New Black is their best programming. Mm-hmm. House of Cards does really well. It's like all their original content is the stuff people are watching more, and that's what they're responding to.
And for them, why fight Hulu to have the rights to Star Trek when you know you're going to do better with Orange is the New Black, who no one is going to get?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's also cheaper, I think, in the long run to make a show and then just rerun it, because you don't have to pay the licensing costs.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, if you
true.
Think about licensing Star Trek, you have to pay CBS in order to rerun it. You probably have to pay Paramount something to rerun it.
And that's a confusing thing about Star Trek now, was Paramount sold their television library to CBS, so they don't own it all anymore the way they used to in the 80s and 90s. So where it's just like, we're making a Star Trek movie, we're making it, you know, we have the TV show, now we're making the movie. They're different companies, so the J.J. Abrams films that we got are very, very different than this new show they announced this week. This new show is going to take place between
six and next generation. Next gen, yeah.
So in that like 60 years that they haven't
and
covered.
And I think that's another thing where it's like they have to fit the shows in these blocks of time they have, where they're like, all right, here's the Star Trek timeline. Here's 60 years we've never done. Here's where the new show goes.
Right.
And I think that's really cool.
They can always go further in the future.
Totally. And
they
can
want,
even go, you figure, can't they go in the past too?
Well, that's what they did with Enterprise, yeah.
Yeah, Enterprise took place before the original Captain series. Kirk. It was the first ship to be called Enterprise.
And I think that kind of stuff's really cool, where like I said, I don't know any other property like Star Trek that can look at this massive timeline over hundreds of years, maybe even thousands. I don't know what the timeline is.
Well, I mean, they time travel all the time, so it includes all of recorded history.
Right, so just the fact that they can say, we have the new show, it's going to fit in this 60-year chunk of history.
Yeah, even the Marvel Universe can't do that because nobody really cares about anything other than the modern era. There are future books, and there are books set when Captain America was fighting Nazis, but no one's really that interested in them. People want to know what's happening
how
now.
Often do they they're never going to do a monthly Two Gun Kids Western Adventures book. It's
no,
not
like,
happen,
yeah, you know,
no one cares. You know what people care about? When the Avengers go to
DC,
the
keeps trying to sell Jonah Hex. People don't buy him,
and it's like it'll last for, you know.
But with Star Trek, that timeline is so wide that when they introduce new characters, it's like, you can live your whole life with that character. That character can be born, have their whole life, and die before the next character comes on stage.
Yeah.
It's not like Gotham, where Bruce Wayne is 12. And, you know, we've got 10 years that we can play with, and there's stuff we can't screw up because we can't really kill the Joker and Catwoman, although they do crazy stuff on that show constantly.
Right.
Like,
they've killed every Joker they've had on that show so far.
Yeah.
Everyone
just so they don't have to
maybe
have one.
The Joker.
Yeah, they have Mr. Freeze running around now.
Yeah.
But but that's set up as a prequel the way Star Wars was. Star Wars was about Darth Vader's a child, and now it's about Han and Leia's son.
Yeah.
That's about a family, so you're only spanning 40 years. With Star Trek, it's like the 2100s to the 2400s.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
You're leaving.
I'm leaving. This is it. Goodbye, right. Guys.
Goodbye.
Where are you going now?
I have to go to Oakland.
To the other store?
Yeah, one of the other stores.
This is the problem when you own three stores and have a podcast.
It's a lot like, it's probably not a lot like having children, but it's a stress level where I'm like, if this is what it's like to have kids, I'm not having kids.
You know what? I don't own three stores. I have one job and have two children.
Yeah.
But I would imagine it's like if the Oakland store had to come with you to this podcast.
Yes.
That's what it's like.
That's what it's like. They go everywhere with me.
Yes. Because somebody has to be there watching them at all times. It's almost like all your employees are daycare.
They are. They're like babysitters. The only reason I have employees is so I have some time off. So, all right, I'm going to try to make as much noise as possible. So
I want to hear the footsteps. I want to hear the door close.
I'll see what I can come up with.
And your shoes are outside. Don't forget your shoes. This is the first time we've ever had somebody exit. It's like a real radio show now.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to cut to commercial.
We need a sponsor.
I'm going to steal your headphones because they're better.
This show is brought to you by Smith Cigarettes.
This show is almost brought to you by Star Trek.
Almost.
Except we don't see a dime from them.
All right.
So is Next Gen still your favorite, Paul?
You know, in my drive over here, I knew you were going to ask me this question. Next Gen is still my favorite. Mm-hmm. I honestly, it will always be my favorite. I'm not sure it's the best of all the series, but it's the one that's closest to my heart.
Well, the thing I find interesting about Star Trek now, I've been rewatching some of Next Gen, and those shows, not only is it this expansive timeline, which is hundreds of years in their own continuity, but they're all such a part of the decade they were produced.
Yeah.
That when I go back to Next Gen, first of all, as we said, since there's not a lot of continuity between them, it's like there are episodes where at the end I'm like, why did you even show me the story? Well, because we had to fill 23 of them this year. But it's also such an 80s show.
It is. And it's got a very 80s sensibility, especially, I mean, it's really progressive in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But then it does these really weird anti-progressive things. That just don't work all the time.
You mean socially or?
Yeah, I mean like socially. Yeah. Like very kind of, you think an episode where they deal with like an alien species that doesn't have gender is going to do something with like what does it mean to like be subscribing to a particular gender? But they're like, no, it's good to have gender. It's like, oh, yeah. You almost got it. You were almost
that's
there.
The episode where it's like, we have no gender, so I'll make out with Riker.
Yeah, no, that yeah, exactly. Like Riker's the Jack Harkness of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I listen to Mission Log podcast all the time, and as they get further and further into series, I think they're in season 4. They keep focusing on the horn dog that is Riker, although he's still kind of connected to Troy because they have a history. So sometimes there are a couple, sometimes they don't. And there is that fluid continuity, as we were saying, when secondary characters come in, we place them as like, oh, the Klingon Civil War mm-hmm. was last year, so now the government is here, and now mm-hmm. we know all this when Gowron comes onto the bridge. But in terms of their own characters, it's like... they say a lot on Mission Log. This week Data has feelings.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, there isn't as much character consistency. Although I think the actors, especially in Next Gen, tried to put some in. I think there were times when, especially like Patrick Stewart, would bring up things. I remember The Inner Light, which is one of
a beautiful episode.
Yeah. And the flute. And every so often that flute shows up and they don't explain it. It's just him playing the flute. And for people that know The Inner Light, it's just like instant waterworks. But for people who don't know, it's just like, oh, Picard is playing the flute.
Yeah, yeah. There's little Easter eggs without getting in the way of the story. I always joke, I remember we all went to see Star Trek Insurrection. Mm-hmm. And I was working at a toy studio there, so we had a piece of the Playmates license. So we were all very invested in Star Trek, and we went to see it that night. And it was Insurrection came out like right after Dax had died on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was like really dark, and like Worf and Dax were married, and then she got killed, and then he's like over her coffin, which was Spock's coffin. And then this movie comes out where they turn the hallway and Worf's just there, and they're like, oh, Lieutenant Worf, come on this adventure. and then Patrick Stewart goes, Worf, what are you doing here? And I went, well, my wife just died, la la la. There is this malleable force of wanting to keep the casual fan, but not hammering them. And I guess it is the number of episodes.
Yeah.
They couldn't guarantee that you'd seen everything.
In fact, I'd be willing to bet most people haven't seen everything. And, you know, we were talking about Marvel earlier, and contrasting Star Trek with the Marvel universe, cinematic universe, is, I think, really instructive, because the cinematic universe has done a great job of having a very deep mythology and bringing new aspects of it in so that casual comics fans kind of don't know the history but can look it up, and the kind of more experienced, the more seasoned comics fans will be like, oh, I see how these people fit together, and I see how these movies all fit together.
Right. We were just talking on the last episode about how I used to not care about spoilers for Marvel because I've read so much Marvel that I'm like, oh, they're doing this story, I know how the story goes. But it's so loose and it's so its own thing now. Mm-hmm. For Civil War, I don't want to see spoilers.
Yeah.
Because I've read Civil War and I've seen all these movies, and there's things I think will happen, but there's no guarantee that that's the story they're adapting anymore.
Yeah.
And they're able to do it not only over 12 movies in the last 8 years, but now 3 television shows.
Yeah. They keep bringing kind of new wrinkles, new additions into this universe, the Marvel universe, without making it overwhelming. Like, you can go see Ant-Man and be like, oh, that was just a movie, and you're able to place it in the mythology, but you also don't have to. And I think Star Trek, it's always either it's very, very canon heavy, it's very mythology heavy, or it's not at all. And that's because, you know, in the 80s and in the 90s, that's when all of this is getting figured out for television.
Right. Right. And in the 80s and the 90s, when, especially in the 90s to the early 2000s, is when the television season box set comes out.
Yeah.
I feel like Buffy was a show that really took advantage of that. And I binged Buffy a couple of years after it ended. So it wasn't streaming yet, but I was renting the discs.
Like, I was doing the same thing. I upped my Netflix to something like 6 or 7 at a time.
Just
so I could get all of Buffy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was doing that. And then I was bouncing it off Angel
mm-hmm.
to kind of keep the continuity.
Were you watching them in continuity order? Because there are some episodes where like Willow and Angel are on the phone
together.
Yes.
I did that. I think I figured out, I think I just timed air order. So once I got to like season four, when Angel starts, I would go Buffy Angel, Buffy Angel, Buffy Angel. And then I didn't get deep enough to figure out, oh, Angel took a couple weeks off, so now they're an episode off. I just bounced, bounced, bounced. But it did work out. There was one, I think it was when Buffy, it was like right after Buffy dies in season five. Again, spoiler alert, she comes right back. But then Willow like tells Angel on Angel.
Yeah.
I think I had that timed just right.
Yeah, that's it's awesome when that works out. And I like to imagine that there are viewers now who just discover that accidentally and they think to themselves like, that's so amazing. I mean, they don't really realize that like, yeah, it was all planned. Like that was the beginning of what you now expect out of entertainment.
And then I remember I wasn't that into it, but Hercules and Xena
were a big proponent
of that, where that was the most you could ask for, was having two shows in that universe. And Star Trek went out of their way to not do that.
Yeah.
Like Deep Space Nine was set at the opposite end of the quadrant than the Enterprise. And, you know, you had Patrick Stewart in the pilot, and then you had Bashir on an episode of Next Gen. But they didn't really cross over. And by the time Worf comes over, you know, Next Gen's in the movies, they can do whatever they want. Yeah. And then the whole premise of Voyager was to put them in a place where they couldn't connect with Deep Space Nine at all. So it was this idea of that you're coming for the brand, but you don't have to be here for every episode. Yeah. And I think as that evolved, we lost that.
Yeah, you know, and then when you get to Enterprise and it's set before the original series, that's when I know a lot of people fell off during Enterprise.
I did too. I fell off during Voyager and then came back for Enterprise because they promised me that it would be better than Voyager. Because Voyager got to a point where I didn't like any of the characters. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody was quoted once as saying it became Star Trek about Star Trek, where the whole episode was about this spatial anomaly that was eating the ship. And it wasn't about social issues, and it wasn't about the characters, and it wasn't about the continuity. And they also squandered a lot of the promise. So the premise was that this was a ship with no support, that had limited resources, that had a crew that it was against each other. And then they made a conscious decision to be like, you know what, let's just put everybody in Starfleet uniforms and kind of make this Next Gen again.
Yeah, I can see that. I started to really like Voyager towards the last couple seasons because I started thinking they did some very interesting things with the Borg. And
once they added 7 of 9 as a character.
Well, 7 of 9 is an amazing character. And the interactions with the Borg and having to ally with the Borg and then like distrust each other. And when the Borg Queen becomes kind of a big character, and the Queen and Janeway as these two kind of powerful female captains.
Yeah, I did like that because First Contact is my favorite Next Gen movie.
Me too. So I think Voyager started doing some really interesting stuff. But with Enterprise, you get this kind of going back before the classic series. I know a lot of fans were upset because, you know, it looks so different from the classic series because it's separated by 40 years.
Right. And it was all like bolted on metal and like khaki jumpsuits. And
yeah, it had kind of this old naval type of theme to it.
And they hit weird story limitations where they kind of wanted to fall back on their old formula. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem with Enterprise was they had made the mistake that a lot of shows make, was they don't want to fire anybody. Mm. So you had these people, they said that it was going to be this fresh take on Star Trek, but the writers and crew had been there for 20 years. And as much as they might have fought against it, they still had this idea of, we know how to make Star Trek.
Well, I mean, they did bring in new people. So Manny Coto came in towards the end.
Right, Manny Coto comes in on the last season.
And it is a really fantastic season. And the Zindi stuff in season 3 was really great.
Yeah, and that was a big season-long arc.
That was a big season-long arc.
And then the Manny Coto was just, it was pure fan fiction.
It was all bring in classic series. So they do the Tholian stuff, and then
they were at that point the ratings had gotten so low they were just trying to get the Trekkies back. Yeah. They weren't trying to appeal outside the base anymore.
Right.
They were trying to just get lapsed people from the base. And I was one of those people. I came back for that season 4.
I did. I actually came back for I watched the first season. I did not watch the second season at the time, and then I came back for the Zindi and the fourth season, and it really blew me away. I thought it was doing some really excellent stuff.
I missed the Zindi. I'd heard like little rumblings about it, and then when I came back for the fourth, it was like the Orions.
They started doing all this awesome stuff. We see the Andorians are in it quite a lot, but so we see a lot of really interesting stuff. What I love about Trek and what I love about even Enterprise is that every series has a different tone, has a different, like, no matter what mood you're in, there's a series you can watch. If you're into the kind of militaristic, dark stuff, put on Deep Space Nine. If you want the exploration stuff, put on Next Gen. And there's so there's always something you can watch. The trouble is you just have to know where to go for it, because, as you're saying, there's so much crap.
Right.
Like, you've got a season that might have 10 great episodes and then 14 meh.
And that's something you've been doing. I noticed on the Facebook page for the celebration, you've been soliciting, hey, what episodes of what series should we show? Because there's a couple of screening rooms running all day.
Right? Yeah, so I run one room is a screening room the whole day, except there's one panel in there. And then there are screenings scattered in other rooms throughout the conference. And I really just wanted to get a good cross-section. So there's going to be at least two episodes from every series, including the animated series.
Yeah. How do you feel about the animated series? Because some people consider it and some people dismiss it.
It's very easily dismissed, but I actually really like it. I think it, like with the other series, it appeals to a particular sense. You know, Star Trek has children fans, and there's a show that's geared towards the children fan, but has a lot of the deeper themes that we see in other series as well. And in fact, it's the first Star Trek series to win an Emmy. It's the first Star Trek series that really features aliens in an interesting way on the Enterprise bridge, because they could do it, because they could draw it. There's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in the animated series. And one of my favorite stories of the animated series, actually, is... And I think it's a story that George Takei tells, so don't want to, like, steal his thunder, but he's George Takei.
He's constantly talking. He's got a new story right now.
The story is the network only wanted, I think, Shatner and Nimoy to do the voices.
Well, it was Filmation, and if you go back to the Batman series they were doing at the time, The New Adventures of Batman, there's four voices on it. They hired Adam West and Burt Ward. And they had one female voice, and then I think it's like Lenny Weintraub did everybody. Like, he does Commissioner Gordon and the Joker and the Penguin. He does every villain. So that's the budget they were looking at.
But Nimoy said, no, you got to bring back George. You got to bring back Jimmy Doohan. You got to bring back DeForest Kelly. I think they got everyone, and Nichelle Nichols. You got to get everyone. They didn't get, was it Chekhov?
Walter Koenig didn't, but he wrote an episode.
Yes, he did. They actually did manage to get back this kind of diverse crew, which is, I think, is really important and says a lot about
Star Trek. Yeah, it does have a lot of the original writers from the original series on there. And they said some of the scripts were recycled, season four scripts before they were canceled. I like it. It was the last series I saw complete because it was the final series to come out on DVD. It took a long time.
It did take a long time.
And no one really reran it. I remember seeing it when I was a kid. So, like, I had very fuzzy memories of the character designs, but it also came out at a time when Mego was producing the figures.
Yeah,
so it was definitely aimed at that younger audience. But there's crazy episodes. There's one where, you know, Spock just becomes 50 feet tall.
Yeah, I know they do. Like, and that's, I love that sort of stuff. I mean, like, just the absolute bonkers nature of some of this stuff. We have an animated show. Let's just do the weirdest shit. And so they do that. I think that's great.
Yeah, there's a character called Bem who's like, his head just leaves his body and goes and does other things. That's like, because it's easy to do in animation.
I know, it's fantastic. Like, I actually wrote a piece for a book for charity about Star Trek, and I wrote a piece on the animated series where there's an episode with a shape-shifting alien that takes the shape of, like, Bones' daughter or something. I can't really remember. And then, like, it turns out he didn't notice. Or, like it's just like, what? Like, that's just weird. That's just weird things happening. But I loved it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I include it. When I add up all the episodes, I do include those. What are you showing from the animated series? Oh, have you locked down the screenings yet?
No, the voting voting ends on Monday, so cast your votes now. Although the top episodes that are winning are the ones that I thought would win. They're kind of, because I did a pre-poll last week of like, tell me what episodes you want to see. And I got about 30 suggestions, and then I added my favorites.
Were there any of those that surprised you? Because everyone knows the big episodes of every series.
Someone wrote in, like, 15 classic episodes, which is great. Some of them were, I mean, you expect City on the Edge of Forever, right? You expect Trouble with Tribbles. I did not expect Charlie X, an episode that not many people remember.
All right. remember it. I wasn't at it.
Yeah, no, I know. But, you know, people want to vote on it. That's
the
fine.
One thing I know about Charlie X is that actor appears in Easy Rider.
Oh.
He's in the hippie commune.
I did not know
that. Yep. That, because I think I'd saw, because I saw a lot of Star Trek when I was 12, and then because I was a rock and roll fan, when I was 17, I watched Easy Rider. Yeah. And I'm like, is that Charlie X?
Well, the nothing else that really has completely surprised me. But the voting has been really fun. It's fun to see kind of early voting pushed. More Trials and Tribulations, which is the Deep Space Nine.
The one we just mentioned, the Forrest Gump.
Early voting pushed that very high, but now it has gone down a little bit. So it's fighting with In the Pale Moonlight, I think.
In the Pale Moonlight's really good.
Yeah, I know.
That's one of those where I was living in New York, and Deep Space Nine kind of get yanked around the syndication schedule, so it... traditionally, when Next Gen was on, it was every Monday they would show the two-hour block of Next Gen, Deep Space Nine. Once Next Gen left, Deep Space Nine used to kind of float all over the place. Yeah. And my roommate and I were both big into Deep Space Nine, but there were whole half seasons I didn't see because I didn't know where they were on. Yeah. And this is the day where these are the days where you set your VCR to a time and you left your television on that channel. So you didn't have a DVR that could follow the schedule. So In the Pale Moonlight was an episode I didn't see until DVD.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it was... That's, the ending of that is so good.
It's Deep Space Nine has some of the highest highs of the season, of the whole Star Trek universe, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, I don't know. You were talking to Steven about it earlier in the episode. I don't know if you could start with it, though, because it's so steeped in the Star Trek universe. Yeah. I don't know if it does a very good job of explaining who the major players are. There's a whole season where the Federation goes to war with the Klingons, and it works because we've had Klingons in every series. Yeah. I don't know if they came on as new characters.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine may not be one that you can start with unless you start... I always tell people you can start with season 3 of Deep Space Nine.
Just go right into the Dominion.
Go right into the Dominion stuff. I mean, season 2 is doing some really interesting stuff with Bajor and the Cardassians. Yeah.
Well, and it was interesting because Deep Space Nine did such a good job of deepening, especially alien races, if not characters, that had been kind of cursorily introduced on Next Gen.
Yeah.
Like the Ferengi are completely different characters than they are on Next Generation, but they're really, really interesting. The Cardassians are just, here's another bad alien. Yeah. You know what? We don't want to use the Romulans or the Klingons in this, so let's create a new alien type. And they... I think they're the best villains in all of Star Trek.
The Cardassians?
Because their culture is so complex.
Well, we learn a lot about that.
Right.
And that's Deep Space Nine. I mean, if we didn't have Gul Dukat and
Garrick,
we wouldn't get this kind of deep culture of the Cardassians.
Which is what we get on the Klingons from Next Gen. I didn't realize this until I went back years later, but really all the work done on the Klingons is Next Generation.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, the Klingons are in the original series and in the movies, but they're just bad guys.
They're just generic bad guys, yeah.
And so much of that culture was invented by Ron Moore. Mm-hmm. In his Klingon episodes.
Yeah. We're actually at the celebration of Star Trek. We're going to have a whole Klingon room where they're doing history of the Klingon Empire, Klingon language discussions. There's going to be props or replica props and weapons and Batleth training
stuff. Great.
So there's going to be a whole Klingon room, which I've kind of set aside as kind of danger zone area.
I imagine you have to set aside for sound as well.
Yeah, I don't know if T'Pol really knows what it's getting into. I'm just imagining the poor security guard sitting down there on the first floor as all these Klingons march in. But
it's not quite Supernatural, which was a lot of introverted girls.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were very excited. They were like less aggressive than the Joss Whedon fans.
Yeah,
they were very polite. They were very sweet. I was at the Supernatural one. We actually recorded a podcast there, and I felt a little out of place because Supernatural is one of those shows that my knowledge wasn't very deep. So I was lost in a lot of those panels, but it was one of those times where you looked around and went, hey, you guys are really into Supernatural, aren't you?
Yeah. But
they were very sweet.
They were. And what I love about doing this whole conference every year is every group is a different kind of fan group. People are equally passionate. They're equally engaged with whatever they're interested in, but they all are very different audiences. The Supernatural audience is very different than the Joss Whedon, which I didn't really expect.
Really?
And then the Joss Whedon is very different than the Doctor Who, which is different from the... Well, actually, I should say, I think is going to be different than the Star Trek.
Yeah. Well, I can just think of going to sci-fi conventions and going to TARDIS every year, and they are very different.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, there's that certain, there's that Britishness about it. We were just talking about this on last week's episode about Benedict Cumberbatch playing Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Is that he's in a great, he's in the perfect position to become a star in this country. And he hasn't had it yet. We thought it was going to happen with Star Trek Into Darkness, and then that movie didn't really perform. And, you know, he's made Oscar bait, which... which people saw before the Oscars, but he hasn't really exploded, and it looks like Doctor Strange will do it.
Yeah.
And
although he's doing that American accent.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I am really I was very
surprised they didn't let him keep his accent.
I don't know why they're making him do an American accent for that. Because of all the Marvel characters, Doctor Strange would be the one that would have a British accent.
Yeah.
I mean, even though it's not in characters.
I mean, Agent Carter has a British accent.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's probably, he's doing a convincing one at least. But, you know, in The Hobbit, he was the voice of the dragon.
Yeah,
like, he's skirted superstardom, and we started talking about Sherlock. And I said, well, you know, Sherlock is huge in the BBC, but it's really only watched by people that love Doctor Who. And it's, they're...
Here
Doctor
the
Who is, yeah, Doctor Who has to have that confluence of Anglophiles and sci-fi nerds. And Star Trek... doesn't need that, which is it's a different flavor.
I'd say Cumberbatch is actually super big in China.
Really?
Yeah, it's and Sherlock is actually super big in China.
Really?
Has a huge fan audience. He is just mobbed when he goes to Chinese events.
And they started shooting season 4 finally.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if they start kind of marketing towards the Chinese market, because, I mean, seriously, it's more massive than here.
Right. So we're in a really interesting place for Star Trek right now. I wanted to get this before we finish up. And I think this is going to have an interesting effect on the celebration. This is one of the things that I'm going to talk about, the celebration, is we're at this point where we're finishing this trilogy of films, which have been, the first one was very popular and people really loved it. The second one,
Bit of a downer.
And now the third one has been handed off because J.J. Abrams obviously went on to Star Wars. And the trailer kind of shocked people. But on the heels of that, we have the announcement of this new series.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a streaming series. And so we're at a point now going into the celebration where we're going to be handed two very different Star Treks within a year of each other.
Yeah, I'm really curious to know how these do. The trailer for Star Trek Beyond... I can't tell you how disappointed I was when I saw it, but then I was really heartened when I'm going to forget his name. Oh my God, Scotty.
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, thank you.
Yeah.
When Simon Pegg's like, yeah, I wrote the movie and that trailer sucked and it wasn't what I wrote. So,
and obviously he was there on set, so it wasn't a typical screenwriter who handed it off to the director and doesn't know what the film's going to be.
Right, he knows. He's there.
Yeah.
So I actually, because of him specifically, I'm really thinking it's going to be good. The TV series, I have no idea what to expect.
But they're hiring all the...
They got the right people for it. Oh my God, Brian Fuller. I mean, like,
yeah, Brian Fuller's running it, and they had Nick Meyer working on it, who did Star Trek 2 and 6.
It's like it's the dream team. So, but I don't know. I don't want to get my hopes up because then they always get dashed. But
yeah, well, my first thought when they mentioned the setting, which was just this week, of that it's taking place after Star Trek 6, I'm thinking, what if it takes place 25 years after Star Trek 6? So then you can have Shatner, you can have Takei playing their age,
like,
now.
Ancient selves,
where, you know, they're both hovering around 80.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, well, I think the two of them and Nichelle Nichols is who we have left.
Yeah.
But they're all still working.
They're
especially
still working.
Takei and Shatner
are
everywhere.
Very healthy, actually. Side story, I actually literally bumped into Nichelle Nichols at a Doctor Who convention because she was there and she was...
And she handled the jostling well? She handled you bumping into her okay?
It was just an accident because she was walking one place, I was walking another place. She handled it with grace, and I handled it with a But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. 25 years later would be great. I'm just curious to know how they fit it, if they're going to fit it into the Enterprise canon or if they're going to go off that, because we know what Enterprise is when, and I'm not sure how that's
going to
fit.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be. And there was also, I don't know if it was an announcement or just a rumor, but they said each season might be completely different.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So next season, they mentioned, I wish I had the source for this, because if it could be fan speculation at this point, but they mentioned like maybe next season takes place after the Dominion War, which is kind of the end of the Next Generation. Because, yeah, you know, Nemesis is just kind of this weird story that just happens. Yeah. So it doesn't really set any flags in the timeline. So they could go anywhere they want.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah. And, you know, there's precedence now with shows like American Horror Story and Fargo of, we're going to change the whole cast.
Yeah.
And we're going
to. Every season will be different.
Yep. All new characters, but the same setting and the same tone. So that's what Star Trek could be now.
And I could totally get behind that. Because what the thing that kills a Star Trek series is when it gets stale.
Yeah, the familiarity.
Yeah.
And that was my problem with Voyager, was a lot of the scripts started to feel like warmed over Next Generation plots.
Yeah.
And I was like, really, the holodeck? And I remember people at the time going, you have enough energy to run a holodeck? Like, you can't. They can't run the food replicators. So they have to have a cook on the staff. But people can just go into a room that creates 3D holograms and runs these programs for hours on end.
Yeah, yeah. you know, I never thought about that. You've kind of blown my mind a bit. But
oh, now we have a new panel.
Oh, no. Oh, don't tell me that. Oh, I just sent out the thing. Oh, yeah, you have to get back to me on that if it works for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it works for me.
Okay, I figured. But
whatever you ask me to do, I'm going to do.
Well, no, just in terms of the timing and everything. But
all right.
But yeah, that is absolutely right. Like, it's the staleness that really kills a Star Trek series.
Yeah, it's the fact that it has to come back every week. And what we're going to do now is we're going to do the modern television show. Yep. We're going to do 13, go away, then we'll rethink it, which Star Trek has never done. I mean, one of the problems with Enterprise, as I was saying, the same crew, same writers that have been there for 20 years, they were not only had they done Star Trek to death at that point, but they were also making a show that had started in the 80s in the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
And television had changed so much between the X-Files and Buffy. And, you know, we're before the streaming, but we're definitely into the HBO series at this point. And Star Trek was slow to reflect that. Now they've caught up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and we were talking about Enterprise, and Enterprise is maligned. I love aspects of Enterprise. I think there are some parts of Enterprise that are great. Some parts were just missteps, you know, mistakes that could have happened. I think the theme song, to be honest, is like the worst part of Enterprise.
The early one with the lyrics. Which, and, again, sounds like it was written in the 80s.
Yeah, and it just doesn't fit what Star Trek is. And one of the things I'm going to be curious, because Brandon Braga is our guest at the celebration.
Really exciting. For casual fans who have now listened to 50 minutes of in-depth Star Trek, Brandon Braga wrote several of the movies. The final episode of the Next Generation, which is one of the greatest episodes, was Ron Moore's partner for years and years and years, and ran a lot of Voyager.
And Enterprise and Next Gen. Yeah.
I probably one of the as big of figures as you can find in the 90s of Star Trek.
And you know, for better or for worse, because he gets a lot of credit. He did some amazing stuff. He also gets kind of shit on sometimes.
Right. Well, he's there for the best and the worst of it.
He is. So I'm going to be curious to kind of talk to him and ask him about the theme song, but ask him also some questions about kind of reflecting back. It's now been, you know, a decade since he's left Star Trek.
Right. And he's done other projects.
He's done other really successful projects. Yeah. He's doing Cosmos now with Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's amazing. Yeah. He's doing Salem, which is very good. So there's a lot of stuff he's doing now. He's very successful. I want to know, looking back, like, what does he think of all the stuff that happens? So.
Right, and what does he think of where it's going? Because we're saying, we're, you know, if you did this a year from now, obviously it wouldn't be the big anniversary, but we would be past this third film and this new series, and we would know what Star Trek is now.
But in some ways, this is the perfect time to have a conversation about what Star Trek could be. And so we can be either happily surprised or most probably very disappointed by what happened.
Well, if you've been with this franchise over the decades as we've had, we've been both.
We've been both.
So when is it? Where is it? Who's there?
Everyone who's anyone is going to be there. It's May 7th, which is a Saturday. It's free, totally free to attend at DePaul University in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, there's a few campuses of
Yeah, so this is the one. It's at State and Jackson. It's right downtown. Any L line will get you there, except the yellow line. Like I said, totally free, Saturday, May 7th, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can come and go as you please. Brandon Braga will be speaking at 1 p.m., and we've got a couple of other keynotes. We've got an academic keynote this year from Dr. Lincoln Garrity, who is flying in from the U.K. He's written 3 books about Star Trek, I think, as well as just scores of articles, and he's a really cool guy. And then Lisa Klink is doing a writing keynote because she wrote for Deep Space Nine and Voyager. And so she's going to come out and talk about her experiences there. She's now a novelist. And she's actually done, this will be of interest to you, she's done some Batman comics.
Ooh, I'd be very interested. So, she hangs around Chicago. I'll get her in here.
Yeah, well, I'll pass along her email. I'm sure she'd be interested.
Oh, sure.
And we've got a lot of other stuff, a lot of panels. You're on that panel about kind of the generations of Star Trek. And what's
right,
new.
Yeah, and that's where the idea kind of came from, was seeing this trailer and going, well... And the original idea was, well, really, are the movies supposed to be doing the same thing the television series is? And then since we had that talk, now there's this new series. Yeah. So I like that it's broadened out to be like, it'll be some of what this conversation was. Like, what Star Trek was in the 60s is very different than what it was in the 80s, which is also pretty different than what it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
And what is it going to be now?
Yeah.
But it's a franchise that I feel like has such endurance. There's never been anything like this on television
there
before.
There really hasn't. I mean, if you just think about all the aspects of Star Trek that have permeated into our culture without us even realizing it. Beam me up. I mean, it's just amazing. It's never been uttered in Star Trek. They never said, beam me up, Scotty. But it has become such a part of culture. If cell phones are just communicators from the old series. I mean, and very deliberately so.
I remember Pete Holmes had a joke about... that he couldn't watch Next Generation because it just looks like people Skyping each other.
Yeah, it really is. And we make jokes like, oh, it looks like that. But literally the engineers that are designing these technologies grew up watching Star Trek. The science fiction that they watched is what influenced them to make the science fact we have today.
The one amazing thing is that we've moved beyond the Star Trek communicator because we had the flip phones for a while.
Yeah.
And I had a very good friend that works for Diamond Toys that was trying to figure out how to create a case, an original Star Trek case. And by the time they had figured out how to do it without, you know, getting in the way of the phone, then the iPhone comes out and
it's over. Yeah.
And I have an app where you can... Where it looks like the Star Trek, where you can just swipe and flip it up.
I have actually seen, and I forget where I saw it. Maybe it was ThinkGeek or something. There is actually a Star Trek communicator shell that you can get for your iPhone, which I kind of put on my Christmas wish list.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I still have a TARDIS on my phone.
Oh, very nice.
It's I'm gonna have to take a step to the left to do that. But when you go back and watch Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, it didn't hit me till much later. Is that sure, everyone's doing screen communication, which honestly they've been doing since at least the Jetsons on television. It's a visual medium. You don't really want to have people on phones and cutting across, which, you know, they would do on Get Smart or Batman. But also everyone has a laptop on their desk and everyone has an iPad.
Yep.
You know, everyone walks around with an iPad.
It's literally called a pad. I mean, it's absolutely, it's the same gosh darn thing. And I think I remember that they've come up with hyposprays now, a kind of subcutaneous injection system. It's not quite the same. And I think tricorders are on their way. I think scientific instruments.
And really, how far are 3D printers from replicators?
I know you can, and I believe, and I maybe this is just fiction in my head, that they are working on 3D printers that can print edible objects.
They have it.
Yep.
It's happened. There's a dough.
It's like the pizza, right?
You can make a 3D pizza. Yeah. So it's.
We're at food replicators, people.
Yeah. Basically, we just need tanks of protein.
Yep.
Yeah. We have so much of the Enterprise.
Oh, we're so close. All we need is a holodeck. Oh, wait. We've got Oculus Rift.
That's true. Yeah. We don't have transporters. That's the one thing. I really want one.
Oh my God, I do too, but I don't want the first one.
No, I don't want to be the first person on it.
I don't want to be the first person that was beamed.
But they said, I was watching some show, I think William Shatner was hosting it, How Star Trek Changed the World, and they talked about a lot of these. And when it got to replicators, there was a scientist who said, well, we can't make a replicator, but what we can do is kill you, scan you, and create a clone somewhere. And someday, that clone will be alive and think it's you. And I think we talked about it in the show at the time. I don't want that.
No, that's not the transporter I want.
Because that's Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's what that is. Well, it was very clear in Invasion of Body Snatchers that the alien was not you.
Well, I've actually, and this will be something I think one of the people on the philosophy panel is talking about this. But that is actually an issue with Star Trek transporter technology, which is what is it that gets transported? Because it's not you. You are converted, your matter is converted into energy and then transported onto a planet. It's science fiction, but is that you or is that a version of you, a clone of you?
Right.
And you take that episode with Scotty when he comes back to the Next Gen Relics, right? He's been in this buffer for 60 years or right, whatever. Yeah.
They did a whole episode of Barclay being afraid of the transporter because of that. And it was an ongoing subplot that McCoy hated it. Yeah. I think in Star Trek 1, he refused to be beamed on. Or
yeah. And in Encounter at Farpoint, I think because he's an old crotchety man.
They brought him on a shuttle. And I think it started when they beam him up. That's when he has the beard and he's angry about it.
But it raises some very interesting metaphysical questions. What does it mean to be a person if you are being beamed and you are no longer a person for a period of time? So
yeah, so the subjects like that will be going on all day. So that's the what idea, you want to hear. Yeah. And again, the address for the campus is?
The address is 14 East Jackson, and it's at the corner of State and Jackson, if you've ever been down there, across the street from the Barnes & Noble, in the same building as the Chipotle. It's on the 8th floor of the building, so we've got the whole floor. It's going to be decked out. We've got vendors coming. We've got entertainment. We've got screenings. We've got the Klingon room. We've got panels and keynote speakers. It's going to be a good time.
I can't wait. I'm definitely going to be there. As I said, I'll be speaking there, so anybody in the area is welcome to come.
And you can find out more information. A couple places to get information. The website is mcsdepaul.com, and there's a link to follow to get to the celebration. That's just our kind of department website. And then Facebook, if you search for a celebration of Star Trek, you'll get a link to the Star Trek Facebook event, and you can sign up there and get updates. And you can vote on what episodes we watch. There's an Eventbrite as well where you can pre-purchase a t-shirt if you're interested. There will be very few t-shirts available for sale at the actual celebration, but if you want one, you have to sign up early, because anything at the celebration that's sold is going, all the money is going to charity. It's going to support Chimp Haven, which is Brandon Braga's charity for housing chimpanzees, rescuing chimpanzees.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yep. Well, thanks for coming on and talking, Paul. It was good to see you again.
My pleasure. I always love coming on.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!